Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now, for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
Ready to take your backyard bird watching to the next level? I can't stop telling everybody about my new FeatherSnap bird feeder. It's a Wi-Fi enabled smart bird feeder, blending the best of technology and nature. I've enjoyed so much since we got this thing set up, looking up close at the birds when they land on the feeder. I get a notification to my phone with a picture. There's 3 pictures every time a bird lands on the feeder. And I get to see some cool action shots. I can see their faces close up, their eyes, their feathers, the detail on their heads. It's amazing. I've enjoyed seeing woodpeckers, goldfinches, male and female, house finches, chickadees, tufted titmouse, blue jay, a few squirrels. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. No more meal planning, no more stressing about nutrition, no more shopping. Every Sunbasket meal is designed by dietitians and chefs to be healthy, nourishing, and delicious with none of the hassle. You can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy recipes each week with dietary options like Mediterranean diet, vegetarian, carb conscious, and even gluten-free dishes, all featuring organic fresh produce. There are truly options for everyone. Plus, you don't have to lock into one type of meal plan. Pick and choose what you're in the mood for every week. Sunbasket takes care of all the hard parts of healthy eating and delivers right to your door. All you do is follow the easy step-by-step recipes, dig in, and enjoy the benefits of eating your best. I was excited to find out that they had plans including gluten-free and dairy-free recipes that are tasty. Go to sunbasket.com/therapychat today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/therapychat to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. I'm excited to share with you that Trauma Therapist Network and Therapy Chat are sponsoring the Integrative Medicine for Mental Health, IMMH, conference in October 10th through 13th at the stunning Gaylord National Harbor Resort in Washington, D.C. Early bird pricing is still available, and I have for you a $100 discount off of the early bird price. There are also special discount rates for the hotel available only through September 16th. This conference is in person and I'm going to be there. I can't wait to meet all of you who are attending in person. I'm going to have an exhibitor table so you can come by and say hi to me. Also trying to organize a Trauma Therapist Network gathering and a therapy chat gathering, maybe a dinner. So I'm hoping that many of you will be there too to hear from leading experts in integrative mental health, including the latest keynote edition, esteemed British cardiologist Dr. Asim Malhotra, along with many other amazing speakers, including multiple time therapy chat guests Dr. Leslie Korn and Linda Tai. You can earn up to 24 CEs and discover the latest research on neuroinflammation, psychedelics, genomics, trauma, nutritional and metabolic psychiatry, the gut-brain connection, the nervous system, the heart-mind connection, etc. Seth Porges and Benjamin Fry, who was a recent Therapy Chat guest, will also be there. Join me at the Integrative Medicine for Mental Health Conference, IMMH 2024. You'll find a link in the show notes to get a ticket with your discount code and a link to book your hotel if you get it by September 16th. So don't miss out. I'll see you there. Go to immmh.org and use code TRAUMATH100 to save $100 off the early bird in-person ticket price. That's TRAUMATH100, TRAUMATH100, to save $100 off the early bird in-person ticket price through September 16th.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 445.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today bringing you a conversation with Sivan Perdue, who is an art therapist located in Salisbury, Maryland. Sivan is dedicated to advancing mental health care for older adults with a particular focus on those living with dementia. Sivan earned her bachelor's degree in studio art from Nazareth College of Rochester and continued her education at Nazareth, obtaining a master's degree in art therapy. Her practice is called Perdue Art Therapy, where Sivan seamlessly blends creativity with therapeutic support. She specializes in assisting individuals coping with dementia and leads a tailored support program designed for people navigating the complexities of caring for their partners during this challenging phase. Beyond her studio practice, Sivan holds a certification in dementia and sexual health. In a consulting capacity, she collaborates with diverse facilities and organizations offering guidance in the development of environments and policies that foster sexual health and affirm identity. So let's dive right into our conversation. Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm very happy to be joined by a colleague who is in my local area, Sivan Perdue. Sivan, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. And one of our TTN members, Kimberly Perlin, told me about you a few months back, and you came and spoke to our Trauma Therapist Network community, and everybody was like, what a great presentation. And I knew I wanted to have you come to the podcast too, because I wanted the information to get out to a wider audience. So today we're going to be talking about sort of rethinking the way we look at dementia symptoms and what behaviors of people who are living with dementia can tell us about what they need and how to effectively support them. So before we get into it, though, can we start off by you telling our audience a little more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am an art therapist, board certified and registered art therapist. And then we also have licensure in Maryland and Delaware. And then going into a lot of the work I do, I'm also certified in dementia and sexual health. So a lot of the work I do clinically is through my private practice, where I work with folks living with dementia, providing art therapy, as well as their care partners. And then I also do some coaching and consulting with care partners, helping them feel equipped to deal with the behaviors and whatever, however dementia wants to show up that day. And then supporting facilities and long-term care places with making sure that their policies and procedures and their staff feel equipped to deal with behaviors and primarily sexual behaviors that might come up on a memory unit. So really trying to support the person living with dementia as a whole, as well as the people who are caring for them, understanding how to better support the person living with dementia as a whole.
Well, I have to say, I actually forgot that you said that when you were with our community, that you have this specialization in sexual health too. And I don't know if we'll have enough time to get into it. We'll see how the conversation goes. But I think that's a really important piece of what you do, because I hear often when people are speaking about someone they love or someone in their life who has dementia, that when unexpected sexual behaviors start showing up,
it can be very disconcerting for those who are caregiving or interacting with the patient or the person who has dementia.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because we don't talk about it, right? So in our culture, we don't talk about our sexual part of being human, especially as we age. And so that's a big piece that, no, we're not. A lot of, you know, having worked in long-term care for several years, we don't train staff on how to manage that, even though it is guaranteed to happen in some form. And so really being able to support and empower our staff and caregivers, because that is part of it, is the loved ones who maybe have put their person in a facility, or if they're still living at home, trying to come to terms and understand why this might be happening, especially if, you know, it's very common now that the couple had been together for 65 years and she would never look at another person, right? And really, again, reframing and understanding that this is a need that needs to be met that really doesn't have anything to do with monogamy or not being monogamous and wanting to, right, cheat on someone or something. It's in helping them understand how to better support their person and that it's actually normal and healthy for them to do and want to engage in being close and having intimacy with another person. But yeah, we can absolutely. That's a whole other thing.
I know. Maybe I need to just have you come back and talk about that if we can make it work for your schedule, because I just want to say that, you know, in the bit of experience that I have in working with people in a hospital setting, not on a memory care unit or anything, but I used to work in a hospital where we worked with people who had both health issues and physical health issues and mental health issues. And so I saw a lot of people come in with confusion who ended up being diagnosed with dementia. And when thinking about placement, there was so much stigma about sexual behaviors that it was like, you know, if they do that, they're out, you know?
And yes.
People just don't know what to do with that.
Yes, but, absolutely.
You know, I'm thinking about, I don't want to just make this topic take up the whole time, but I'm just thinking about the way, and it sort of fits with what we were planning to talk about, that, you know, when the filter is gone, the behaviors or the ways of feeling that are in all of us are going to come out. But when you look at someone who's 80, 85 years old, who's maybe been very prim and proper their whole life, and suddenly start seeing them behaving as a sexual being, as a family member, especially if it were your parent or something.
It's very disconcerting. And usually adult children have a tougher time with it than spouses, because we don't want to think of our parents like that. Like, they're asexual anyway, right? They had us and then that's it.
Right.
I'm just gonna leave it over there. But in reality, they probably or might have had this whole colorful life that you know nothing about. Right. So, yeah.
Until suddenly you start knowing about it in ways that you weren't expecting or prepared
for. Yes. And what do you do with that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's our cliffhanger for the part two.
Stay tuned.
So I personally have some people in my life who have dementia. And for one thing, I see that so many people around that person don't realize it, don't believe it, and tend to have like a picture in their minds that dementia means memory loss. And, you know, no, they're not forgetful. They know everyone. They're not having memory issues, so they don't have dementia. But it's really a whole different picture than that, what it can look like. And that's what I'm realizing. So can you talk about sort of how it shows up? Like how dementia can be in unexpected ways, even maybe.
Sure. Yeah. So if we just do a quick rundown, dementia in itself is not the disease. It's the group of symptoms, right? So there's a lot of diseases that can cause dementia symptoms. So the ones we talk about, right, or we use interchangeably for they have dementia would be Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Lewy body, frontal temporal lobe, vascular dementia, right? Those are all under the umbrella. But there's other illnesses that can also cause it. And then there's very treatable things that can cause dementia-like symptoms, such as B12 deficiency can cause memory issues. Depression can show up with very much dementia-like symptoms. And that's a huge thing, is treating and making sure that we are aware in older adults and even those with dementia, is this depression, right? Or is this dementia? And maybe if we, and it might be both, and absolutely, but treating the depression, which is very, very easy to do, can improve other functioning symptoms and just improve quality of life, which is what it's about ultimately. So we hear mostly about Alzheimer's. That's the most prevalent one that has the highest diagnose rate, kind of the sexy one to talk about a little bit. We have others that we hear when celebrities get them right, like Parkinson's or Lewy bodies. And memory loss is one of the symptoms, but it might not always be the main symptom in somebody. It's the main symptom in Alzheimer's. So we hear that one a lot. But it might be secondary to something else in another type of dementia. Some dementias progress faster than others, right? Lewy bodies or frontal temporal lobe, it progresses much faster, much more quickly than Alzheimer's. And because it impairs your frontal lobe, the filter is completely gone, right? And those folks tend to have hallucinations and delusions and mood changes that are much more associated with that. But a lot of the time, you're right, people, if they are not showing obvious memory loss, people don't kind of believe it because that's what we associate with it, right? What people don't realize is our social graces and being able to perform and compensate in social situations lasts for a really long time. So even if you're with someone, if you're only with them for 15 minutes, they're going to keep themselves together for those 15 minutes and seem completely fine, right? Yeah. If you go past that and start talking to them for longer, you'll start to see the cracks, right? You'll start to see the repetitiveness or the loss of following a thought pattern or following the conversation. That will come out more and be more apparent because we're really good at compensating as well. And especially in the initial stages, when things start showing up, we do things to help us out, right? We put reminders, we do post-its, we schedule things, all these wonderful tools that we have to keep us together. But again, it starts to show up. And oftentimes it will show up more in loss of following a conversation. Financial is a big one. So people will pay bills more than once or not pay bills at all because they can't keep track of that anymore. Forgetting sometimes, but it might necessarily be an appointment, right? And it's not necessarily a person. You don't necessarily, with like Alzheimer's, forget who people are until much further in the disease process. But if they're still home and living independently, it might show up as, like, I have a client who this past Christmas, every Christmas she made German chocolate cake for her family and she loved doing it and she knows the family loved it and she couldn't do it this year because she couldn't follow the steps. It was too many steps. And that's one thing that we lose with dementia is sequencing and being able what to know to do next in a progression, whether it's brushing teeth or making a cake or balancing a checkbook, right? Any of those things. If we don't know what comes next, then we freeze a lot of times, or we get angry and frustrated and irritated. And so that comes out as agitation. But if you were to speak to her quickly, you wouldn't know she has dementia. But once you get talking to her, you see like she couldn't, out of a mix, right? It wasn't even from scratch. It was just a box mix of German chocolate cake and she couldn't do it because it was just too many steps. She couldn't put it together for herself to do that. And that's the type of stuff people don't see always.
Yeah, it's like you have to know what you're seeing. It's like, to me, that makes sense in terms of like a processing like deficit. You could do things like three steps and now you can't.
Mm-hmm. And one day might be better than another. I know caregivers that get frustrated because their person can't brush their teeth, right? How long have we all been brushing our teeth, right? It seems completely natural. We do it intuitively. We don't have to think about it. But when you can't sequence, there's a lot of steps to brushing your teeth and knowing what to do and even being able to recognize the toothpaste, right, in the bathroom and that that's toothpaste versus face cream. So that can be really difficult for folks and for caregivers because one day they might not be able to do it and the next day they can, no problem. But somehow those neurons weren't firing the same way because you can't always predict what's going to work and what's not, especially in the earlier stages. And so I know caregivers can get frustrated because they see it as, well, they're just being lazy. They don't want to do it anyway. They, you know, she hasn't brushed her teeth. And I don't know why she's not. Well, usually it's because we avoid things we're uncomfortable with, right? And so if it gives us anxiety and we know we should be able to know how to do this very simple thing, but I can't figure it out, I'm not going to ask for help because that's embarrassing, right? I'm not a child. I shouldn't need to have someone come help me brush my teeth, but yet I don't know how to do it. So if I just say I did it, but not really do it, then right, then it kind of gets to be that lying sort of cover up thing that you might recognize with your kids. But that's just a safe face to say that, oh yeah, of course I did it. Why wouldn't I be able to do that? Yes, I brushed my teeth, right? And then you're like, no, I've noticed you haven't done it. And then it's kindly helping them figure out how to do it. But that's where you start to, again, instead of viewing it as they're being lazy or they just don't want to do it, it's, okay, why aren't they doing it, right? What I say to a lot of people is instead of saying, like, why the hell wouldn't they brush their teeth? You say, why the hell wouldn't they brush their teeth, right? Just flip it a little bit to really start being curious, right? I encourage caregivers a lot to be curious as to why something might be showing up. Because usually there's a reason, right? People aren't spiteful. They don't want to, you know, not shower because they're lazy, right? It's usually a reason that there's some anxiety or something uncomfortable. And so we have to say, okay, what might we need to do to make the situation or the task easier for them so that they feel comfortable doing it again? Because they can't figure that out for themselves anymore. And they're not going to be able to tell you either.
Right. And, you know, I see where things can escalate when someone, let's say they can't / don't brush their teeth. And then the caregiver's like, they're refusing to brush their teeth. And, you know, they're so stubborn. And
yeah,
like they want to like wrestle the person into the bathroom and make them brush their teeth. And of course, the person's going to respond to that. You know, they're not going to like that.
No.
But the caregiver that's doing that thinks sort of like they're being victimized by this person that they're supposed to be taking care of, instead of seeing this person is in distress.
And if you just think about comfort level, right? And you do, you see a lot with bathing, people refusing, quote unquote, to bathe. And I had this with, I was working with a woman and she was caring for her husband and they were in their 80s and she just came in so upset because he was always very clean, right? Always very cleanly. She couldn't get him to go shower. He had been to that point doing it on his own. But when we got into it, she recognized, well, no, he has been wanting me in there with him, not doing anything, right? But in there, he more and more, he needed her around him. And that's a comfort security thing. That was his person, right? And so he felt safe when she was in eyesight. And so it's talking about, well, if he always have really good hygiene habits, that can't be comfortable to not be clean, right? Even not brush, right? That's not a comfortable place to be in. And that discomfort doesn't go away just because you have dementia. And so looking at why might he not, and breaking it down for her to say, no, this is from anxiety. He doesn't know how to do it himself. Again, if you break down taking a shower, there's a lot of sequencing going on with that. Then you add on top sensory perception issues and temperature feeling issues, right? And if they're in a facility, embarrassment, modesty pieces. Some of these folks in long-term care facilities have not been naked in front of anybody but their spouses. So just suddenly have to be naked in front of this young girl that you don't know very well. I would be super uncomfortable if that was me. Right. And so it's understanding, like, again, this isn't that they're trying to make things difficult for you. Right. And that's something I like to tell my caregivers too, is your person with dementia is not giving you a hard time. They're having a hard time. And that's the only way they know how to express it. And I hate to make the connection to kids because it's not childlike, but it's similar in that they no longer have the ability to verbally tell you what is going on, just like a child does not have the language to express what is going on. So it comes out more physically or more base emotions like anger or agitation, because they, and two, they might know what they want to say, but they can't say it. And how frustrating is it to be living every day like that?
It's like every word you're saying is making me think about so many things, but to the part about it's not like being a child, because they're not regressed, or they're not a child in an adult's body. At the same time, I'm thinking, when I think about trauma, that, you know, when something gets triggered that's old, it is like a younger part that shows up, maybe. You know, when, if I feel terrified, you know, my mind may go back to feeling and me acting the way I did when I was terrified, when maybe I heard fireworks when I was 4 years old or something like that, and it scared me. So that may be really confusing for people too, when someone is sort of behaving what would look like, if you're not a mental health person and you're just sort of like, why are they doing this? You might think they're behaving completely out of character. But as you and I were talking before we started recording, that it can be that for the person with dementia, that they are feeling powerless, or they are feeling vulnerable the way they would have when they were younger, and reacting to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's tough about that sometimes, like we're talking, is sometimes we don't know, right? And especially, again, if we're caring for our parents don't tell us everything, right? We don't always hear all the stories, especially the trauma ones or the difficult ones.
Yeah.
And so we have no idea always that that's what's showing up with somebody, because if they never told anyone, how are we supposed to know? And so trauma-informed dementia care is so important. And I think it's safe to assume everybody's had some sort of trauma,
yeah,
in some way. And so just approaching it with that compassion, again, of, okay, what's the unmet need? What do we need to do for this person? Because obviously something is going on, even with the dementia, because the trauma and even some mental health issues don't go away just because there's dementia there. You get confused timelines, and so they might think that something similar is happening, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be all wiped out necessarily. And so it's important. And they might not, again, just like people, you know, going around that don't have cognitive impairments, trauma is showing up in ways they didn't realize that that's what was showing up and why. And so I think it's why it's so important to get as much history as possible about that person, and really encouraging families to get those stories and dig deeper than what's their favorite food and what were their hobbies and how did they like to spend their free time and where did you guys vacation, right? All of that's super important. But when you're caring for somebody and behaviors that will probably show up because they're in a difficult, scary situation sometimes, understanding who that person was and the nuances is so, so important to be able to treat and care for a person from a human relationship standpoint versus the medical model of just managing symptoms as they come up, right? They're agitated, so why don't we give them something to calm down a little bit, right? Let's band-aid it. We tend to do in medical model anyway, right? Versus figuring out, okay, like, yes, maybe let's help them calm down, but then we need to really dig and figure out what is going on. Why is this showing up? Is there a part of their life before showing up now, right? Oftentimes it's gotten a lot better, but simple things of somebody getting up, if you got up to work at 4:30 every day and we're ready to go, that's not going to go away. There's this woman on one of the units I worked with, and she was a nurse. And she was a night nurse, right? She worked night shift. So she was up at night, and she would think that she, especially because, right, there's nurses around her, why wouldn't she be at work?
Oh.
So she was at work, right? So she expected to do work. And so they would sit her next to them at the nurse's station. And sometimes they would give her a clipboard and have her do rounds. So she'd wheel herself in her wheelchair making rounds, right? But that's giving her purpose and understanding Miss Jones was a nurse. So this is why she's seeking this kind of engagement. And we are If we try to keep her from doing that, that's when behaviors and things are going to show up, because this is a need that she has that she might not even understand that she needs to do this. And I loved her because she was very outspoken and sassy, which I think is amazing. And she would tell you, but looking at, okay, they can't change, right? She's not like, oh, I'm not at work anymore, even though this is reminding me of work. It's time for me to go to sleep because I don't work, you know, even if she's been retired for 20 years, right? If that's where she thinks she is mentally, to some extent, then that's a drive light. If you've been doing that for how many years as a career, that's what you're going to want to do. And so it's everybody else adapting to that person as much as possible to help support where they are and what needs that they have. So it wasn't much for the nurses to give her a clipboard and have her hang out with them. And it's quiet and, you know, she's not disturbing anybody. And so it's helping also give her a sense of purpose, which is so important, is to feed that connection and that I still have something to contribute. I think a lot of folks are uncomfortable working with older adults because we imagine them just kind of wasting away in nursing homes, which for a long time was the case, because people don't like to work with people at their end of their lives, and we don't like to face mortality, and it's not necessarily the sexy, cool thing to talk about. But it's so important, especially since our population is getting older, right, and increasing, to know that this is a great time, and it is so important to continually to engage people, and who they were before the diagnosis is so important, as to know who they were before the diagnosis and to continue to foster and have that relationship for this person, because that part of you doesn't go away. People might try and put it on the shelf because it's inconvenient or not relevant that they think in the moment, but we need to try as much as possible to have that relationship-centered care, because it's going to make it easier for the caregiver to care for the person, and it's going to have them give better care for that person.
Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's been seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. After doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also supports the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. I've noticed that when I feed my dogs regular supermarket brands, they have more itchy skin, scratching their ears, behavior issues, agitation. And when I feed them healthy whole foods, superfoods, they're calmer, happier, and not having those skin issues and ear discomfort. Go to badlandsranch.com/chat and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/chat today. I'm excited to share with you that Trauma Therapist Network and Therapy Chat are sponsoring the Integrative Medicine for Mental Health, IMMH, conference in October 10th through 13th at the stunning Gaylord National Harbor Resort in Washington, D.C. Early bird pricing is still available, and I have for you a $100 discount off of the early bird price. There are also special discount rates for the hotel available only through September 16th. This conference is in person and I'm going to be there. I can't wait to meet all of you who are attending in person. I'm going to have an exhibitor table so you can come by and say hi to me. Also trying to organize a Trauma Therapist Network gathering and a therapy chat gathering, maybe a dinner. So I'm hoping that many of you will be there too to hear from leading experts in integrative mental health, including The latest keynote edition, esteemed British cardiologist Dr. Asim Malhotra, along with many other amazing speakers, including multiple-time Therapy Chat guests Dr. Leslie Korn and Linda Tai. You can earn up to 24 CEs and discover the latest research on neuroinflammation, psychedelics, genomics, trauma, nutritional and metabolic psychiatry, the gut-brain connection, the nervous system, the heart-mind connection, etc. Seth Porges and Benjamin Fry, who was a recent Therapy Chat guest, will also be there. Join me at the Integrative Medicine for Mental Health Conference, IMMH 2024. You'll find a link in the show notes to get a ticket with your discount code and a link to book your hotel if you get it by September 16th. So don't miss out. I'll see you there. Go to immh.org and use code TRAUMATH100 to save $100 off the early bird in-person ticket price. That's TRAUMATH100, TRAUMATH100, to save $100 off the early bird in-person ticket price through September 16th. My issue with perimenopause was bloating, inflammation. I was also super fatigued and I had a lot of trouble sleeping. Now it's easier to manage menopause with Hormone Harmony. I went to a party last weekend and I couldn't believe how many of the women I was talking to were saying that they were going through perimenopause and had no relief from bloating, gas, hot flashes, mood swings, and just not feeling themselves. And I got it. I told them. I've been there. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. Women can't stop talking about it on social media, and a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogen. Here's the beauty about adaptogen. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymama.com. Just use the code CHAT at checkout. That's happymama.com and use the code CHAT for 15% off today. Therapists, we've all had that moment. You wake up in the middle of the night. Oh my gosh, did I do my notes? Well, you don't have to worry about that anymore when you use Therapy Notes. Therapy Notes makes it easy to write your notes, get them done quickly, but thoroughly. My group practice has used Therapy Notes for 6 years, and everyone always finds it easy to use. But the best thing is, if you do need help, you can call their customer service number and a person answers the phone. And anytime I've ever had to use it, which is maybe 3 times in the past 6 years, my issue has been resolved easily with a cheerful demeanor in 15 minutes or less. So I highly recommend Therapy Notes. And don't forget, go to therapynotes.com and use promo code CHAT to get 2 free months. Yeah, you're speaking about something really important, and I want to make it even more explicit that it's like the way we think of elderly people is we don't see them as full people who have like interests and strengths and challenges and wisdom. We certainly don't in our culture treat elderly people as if they have wisdom. And yet, you know, I think by treating it, you begin to be treating people as objects. Anytime you're treating people as objects,
yeah,
they're never going to exhibit behavior that's going to make you want to spend more time with them. They're going to react negatively to that, you know?
Uh-huh. Because they, something, you know, I talk with partners and caregivers a lot about is your energy approaching the situation is so important. Because if you approach a person or work on a unit or whatever as and try and just manage people as a group of symptoms, right, it's not going to work. And so if you even thinking of if you are anxious about giving a bath to a person because in the past they have been combative or resistive to it, if you show up expecting to have resistance, they pick up on that. We continue to interpret nonverbal cues for much longer, right? Again, even if we don't necessarily can tell you why, we can tell people's mood and energy and right how they approach the situation. And so if you as a caregiver approach the situation with openness, calmness, right? And you be the calm presence that is there, they are going to calm down. They are going to feel better because it creates that safe feeling environment. Okay, I'm okay, right? They're calm. Everything's okay. If you come with it anxiety, they're going to pick up on that and they're going to become anxious. And so a lot of the times when I'm working with caregivers, they don't even realize, right? They have all the best intentions and they're trying to come and be pleasant and helpful. But if there's that underlying anxiety and you're kind of geared up for a fight or for resistance and trying to think ahead of how they understand that that's, you know, coming up. And so because they don't understand that, they just pick up on it and then that can spiral to it. Yeah.
So I think a really important point you're making is that the caregiver has most of the power in how the patient or person with dementia is behaving. Even when we might think as the caregiver, oh, why is this happening? Blah, 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 blah. But the way we engage from our physiology, the energy that we're giving off, and the way that we interpret the other person's behavior make a major difference in everything that's happening in the interaction.
Yeah, absolutely. Oftentimes, right? If we try and provide care and it goes sideways, right? And they're resistive, it makes us feel powerless because we don't know what to do to best help them, right? So yes, there's different things and different strategies that you can do. But thinking of it too, you can read all the interventions in all the books and all that sort of thing, but it's remembering that you are the adaptable one. You can change the environment. You can change the timeline. You can change how you approach things, how fast things go, how slow. They cannot do that anymore. And so to get their behavior to change, you have to change things that you are doing. And it will indirectly influence how they approach and behave in the situation oftentimes. Yeah. So it's really feeling empowered again to say, no, I can, you know, I can work on, again, it might not happen every time or even the first time because people are different. And again, their brain might be firing slightly different that day, but going in with that relationship standpoint and understanding, okay, if this goes sideways, it goes sideways. Like I know how to handle it, or it's okay. We try again in half an hour, because that's kind of one of the back end good things, right, about dementia is that if they don't remember, you can reapproach them again, right? Go collect yourself, calm down, help them calm down, and then come at it again. And maybe they'll be more receptive, or maybe it's the time of day, or maybe they're hungry and they're tired and they can't tell you, or maybe they have pain and they can't tell you, right? So it's looking at again, why would this person be acting this way?
Yeah. So something that you shared when you and I were just talking before we started recording that I feel would be a good way to wrap up our conversation, as it already comes to the end so quickly. I don't know how that happens. You were telling me about how a person who is living with dementia is communicating their needs through their behavior, and how, like you said, you've said like, why might they be behaving this way? But can you talk a little bit more about what behavior is really showing or telling to about what's happening for the person with dementia?
Yeah. So it's usually an unmet need. And by that, it can be hungry, tired, uncomfortable, right? Like physical needs. So it's kind of like running through the checklist with that, because they might not be able to tell you that anymore. But it can also be emotional needs. And so it could be, like we were talking, I worked and there's this one lady on the dementia unit, and she kept, you know, again, they call it sundowners, right? Kind of at the end of the day, people tend to have more confusion, but she was expecting, she was worried, and she came to me and she says, I need to catch the bus. I need to go home. My mom's going to be worried about me, right? And so what we used to do is say, no, honey, your mom's dead and you don't need to go home. You're staying here with us now, and that's fine. And so why don't you come over here, right, and do it? Well, then we found that's not really that helpful, because if the person is in
the person burst into tears over and over,
yes,
and hearing
exactly,
that their mother's
they didn't
dead.
Remember that their parents were dead. Yes.
Yeah.
But instead, what is more helpful is to acknowledge the underlying feeling, right? So what are they really communicating? And so if you think about it, If they're worried that their mother is going to be worried, then we are reassuring them that they are safe and their mother knows that they're safe. So going back to Maslow's hierarchy, right, of like, what is this basic need that this person has because they can't control anything going on and they get confused? A lot of it's safety, right? You're safe. You're taken care of. She knows you're here, so it's okay. She knows you're going to have dinner with us. Dinner's coming soon. Why don't we come in here and we can focus on this together, but it's okay. You are okay, right? A lot of times that, okay, I'm okay. Yeah, absolutely. You're okay, Miss Rita. Let's go in here. We'll see, right? And if they keep, because sometimes people persevere, right? But I have, it's okay. It's okay. We know. We talk to her. It's okay, right? And then you try and re-engage them in something else. But it's meeting, you know, it's understanding, especially if it's an emotional need. What is that emotional need that they are trying to have met that they don't know? And a lot of it's safety. Because how unsafe would you be feeling if your whole world's turned upside down and you don't understand anything going on anymore and you're in a place that you don't recognize and all of this stuff, right? When we talk it out, it's like, oh, yeah, I would feel disconcerted and unsafe too if I didn't know what was happening.
Exactly. Exactly. So someone I love who has dementia will say when they are more disoriented, they'll say, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And I can, and they run to their caregiver and just, you know, and then they're like following the caregiver around and the caregiver gets annoyed, like, you know, you don't need to do anything. And what I see is that the person's saying, I don't understand what's happening right now. I don't really know what is going on. So I don't, what am I supposed to be doing right now? Like, what's happening? What's supposed to be going? And that's all they can say. And they're panicking. And then they're met with like an angry response. They may just like sort of drift away and go off and just like stare at the wall, you know, or they cry, but nothing is happening to comfort them in that kind of situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that goes back to your right is, why might they be doing this? And unless, most likely, right, if we know who that person is, did they live a life of luxury where they didn't have to do anything all day? No, maybe they raised kids and maybe they worked full time. And maybe, you know, and so if that time of day they used to be preparing snack for their kids or getting off, right? Again, they might not understand, but if you've never just done nothing all day, that feels weird, right? Like you feel, yeah, like I should be doing something because I was also taught if you don't do anything, you're lazy. And so I need to be contributing, right? I have this person helping me with other things, but what's my purpose, right? So if she's cooking and she's doing the laundry and she's helping me with stuff, I don't have a purpose anymore. And it doesn't feel right to just sit and watch TV. So yeah, so it would make sense that I don't understand what's going on. And so I feel like I should be doing something, but I can't tell you what that is.
Yeah. So even in that situation, even just to say, what I notice is when I interact with this person, I just go, oh, it's okay. It's okay. I don't even say anything else, but it's okay. And then they're like, okay, you know, and I'll be like, you want to come sit over here? And then we just sit down together. So it's like, they're looking for soothing, you know, yeah, they need like relational holding in some way, not a lot.
Yeah. I see you. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I care.
Okay. I see you.
I'm
you're here with
you.
Me. Right.
Yeah, we're okay.
You're here with me. We're okay. Why don't we sit or help me with this? Right. And do right. And that's why routine is so important for folks with dementia and that need, right, that continues to be contributing to society. And so yeah, feeling like they have a purpose, because once we lose that sense of purpose, what are we doing here? It's kind of taking up space, right? So assuring them that they're safe and you don't need to necessarily be doing anything until maybe later. And, you know, right now is our time to work on this puzzle. So that's what we should be, right? And then you just redirect, yeah, them into something. But yeah, absolutely. It's reassuring and validating that emotional need. Again, I see you. I'm here with you. And that is okay. And you are okay.
That's just, I mean, these are like the most basic human skills. But for some reason when, and I think partly it's because people just don't understand what they're seeing, especially if, like I was talking about, people don't even think that the person has dementia. So they think they're just being difficult in some way.
Yes.
But as you said, why would someone just want to be difficult?
Right. Why would someone want to follow you around asking for something to do? Probably not.
It's not their care. It's not their normal behavior or character, you know, presentation. Yeah. So why would they? Right. Well, this has been really, 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 really helpful. And I hope to, if we can make it work and if it fits for you, to bring you back and talk maybe more about sexual health and dementia too, because that's, you know, I know it's like a mystery to most people and something that many of us don't want to think about at all, but it's part of reality.
Yeah. And it goes, something I'd be happy to come talk about. It also goes back to that relationship piece and connecting with another human being, right? Just our human need to feel connection to other people.
Which is absolutely normal.
Yeah.
So, Sivan, you talked at the beginning about all of the ways that you serve in this work. And where can people find you if they wanted to consult with you or do some coaching with you?
Yeah. If you want some help, if you're working with a client or whether it's the caregiver not knowing what to do with their elderly parent, or maybe you see some older folks, you can come. My website is just SivanPurdue.com, and you can find me through there. I'm Sivan Purdue on all the socials, and you can book a time, and I'm happy to chat with you or do some consultation or consulting so that you feel more comfortable, because it's not something we get taught in grad school on how to work with this population at all. So kind of I'm happy to help you make sure that your person has as much support or you feel comfortable supporting them as best as possible. And then if they need other resources, what's available.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for being my guest on Therapy Chat today.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Regan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.
Try Therapy Notes, the number one rated electronic health record system available today. With live telephone support 7 days a week, it's clear why Therapy Notes is rated 4.9 out of 5 stars on Trustpilot and has a 5-star rating on Google. Therapy Notes makes billing, scheduling, note-taking, and telehealth incredibly easy. And now for all you prescribers out there, Therapy Notes is proudly introducing ePrescribe. Try it today with no strings attached and see why everyone is switching to Therapy Notes, now featuring ePrescribe. You can get 2 months free by using promo code CHAT at therapynotes.com. Trauma Therapist Network is a website to learn about trauma and how it shows up in our lives and to find a trauma therapist. Go to traumatherapistnetwork.com to find a trauma therapist near you today.
I'm excited to share with you that Trauma Therapist Network and Therapy Chat are sponsoring the Integrative Medicine for Mental Health, IMMH, conference in October 10th through 13th at the stunning Gaylord National Harbor Resort in Washington, D.C. Early bird pricing is still available, and I have for you a $100 discount off of the early bird price. There are also special discount rates for the hotel available only through September 16th. This conference is in person and I'm going to be there. I can't wait to meet all of you who are attending in person. I'm going to have an exhibitor table so you can come by and say hi to me. Also trying to organize a Trauma Therapist Network gathering and a Therapy Chat gathering, maybe a dinner. So I'm hoping that many of you will be there too to hear from leading experts in integrative mental health, including the latest keynote edition, esteemed British cardiologist Dr. Asim Malhotra, along with many other amazing speakers, including multiple-time Therapy Chat guests Dr. Leslie Korn and Linda Tai. You can earn up to 24 CEs and discover the latest research on neuroinflammation, psychedelics, genomics, trauma, nutritional and metabolic psychiatry, the gut-brain connection, the nervous system, the heart-mind connection, etc. Seth Porges and Benjamin Fry, who was a recent Therapy Chat guest, will also be there. Join me at the Integrative Medicine for Mental Health Conference, IMMH 2024. You'll find a link in the show notes to get a ticket with your discount code and a link to book your hotel if you get it by September 16th. So don't miss out. I'll see you there. Go to immh.org and use code TRAUMATH100 to save $100 off the early bird in-person ticket price. That's TRAUMATH100, TRAUMATH100, to save $100 off the early bird in-person ticket price through September 16th.